76º Block Talks. A gente fala com Mehran Haidari, cofundador da Castle NFT, que conta pra gente sobre os desafios de UX no mercado emergente de colecionadores digitais no primeiro repeteco do nosso quadro de entrevistas. Essa entrevista está em inglês. Eu sou Maurício Magaldi e esse é o Block Drops, o primeiro podcast em português sobre blockchain para negócios.
As notícias que você ouve aqui não têm qualquer vínculo com o meu trabalho atual, não configuram nenhuma forma de patrocínio, propaganda ou incentivo para o consumo e têm um foco exclusivamente educacional para o mercado.
All right, everybody. I have here again the pleasure of hosting Mr. Mehran Haidari, who's now in a different capacity from the first time. He's the first repeat on Block Talks. Mehran, welcome again. Who you are and what you do now with blockchain.
Awesome. Maurizio, thank you so much for having me. It's so exciting to be back on Block Talks once again in a very different capacity. Some of the listeners might remember I was previously at UNICEF, helping them develop their crypto strategy. While I was there, we helped set up their crypto fund so that UNICEF can experiment with Ether and Bitcoin. And as soon as we wrapped up that project, I was thinking about what I can do next. And so I think around September last year, I quit UNICEF and I co-founded a company with some of my buddies in the Ethereum ecosystem. And essentially, I am now co-founder of a company called Castle. And at Castle, we're currently working on building a wallet specifically for the NFT ecosystem on the Ethereum blockchain.
I love that. I love that. And one of the things that we've been pounding away here at Block Drops is the UX in crypto is broken. So what is it that sort of compelled you and your co-founders to actually jump into this and come up with a NFT specific wallet? What is it that was so compelling that you say, I need to do something about this?
Yeah, for sure. So our story is actually quite interesting. While I was still working at UNICEF last year, I had a buddy of mine reach out to me back in March 2021. And this was a buddy of mine through a friend who had previously worked at TikTok, Instagram, and he hits me up and he's like, hey, we actually have a client that's interested in building an NFT marketplace. We're really good on the consumer side, you know, because of our background, but we don't know anything about crypto and blockchain. Do you want to help hack something together to demonstrate, you know, what an NFT marketplace can look like for the client that they had? And the client that they had was actually a hip hop artist. I can't say who just because, you know, the project is under NDA, so I won't dive too much into that. But it was a very compelling artist for me personally because I actually listened to that artist. And so I was working, you know, the normal 9-to-5 gig with UNICEF. But as soon as the day ended, I would get on a Zoom call with my two current co-founders and we would hack away. It was crazy. Sundays we were working an additional 8 to 10 hours every day after our normal jobs till like 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. We built something nice. But unfortunately, the negotiations with the hip hop artist's team weren't really good for us. But what we realized is the three of us as co-founders, we actually have a lot of complementing skills. And so, you know, we started diving into the NFT ecosystem a little bit more and we just continued hacking different things over the summer. And that was perfectly timed with 2021's NFT summer craze. And, you know, we started looking into NFTs, not only from our product side, but we started personally, you know, buying and selling, speculating on different NFT projects. And that's where we discovered a lot of user experience challenges. You had someone like me that's been in the space for quite a few years, but then I had my friends join the space that were building consumer tech. And so a lot of the things that they took for granted was no longer available to them in the Web3 and NFT space. And so we actually pulled a lot of Ether together and we were buying and selling NFTs. But the way we were doing it was not secure and the user experience was quite terrible, actually. And this didn't kind of lead to us building what we're building now just yet. We actually went through with this for a few months. So the way that it worked was I think one of us in a group of five bought an NFT project that did quite well. And then, you know, we had a nice amount to kind of start investing in other projects as well. And so all of the Ether was in one person's hot wallet. None of us had access to it. And so what started happening over a course of a few months was one of us would be at home, we would see an NFT project come out, and somebody else had the liquidity, so we couldn't buy it. Or we had enough liquidity, but it's like it's split between five or six different hot wallets. So again, like by the time we got all the liquidity into one of the wallets, again, we like were too late, or the price had gone up too fast. And so we weren't very mobile with the money that we had. We were poorly timing sales. Like a lot of the kind of latency that you kind of hear about on Twitter, we were experiencing firsthand. So that was kind of, you know, on the side, we were kind of getting into the NFT ecosystem and we're like, wow, a lot of this stuff isn't great. We had some of us in our group lose access to the crypto wallet because they got caught in phishing attacks, which compromised, you know, a bunch of her funds. It was quite crazy. And then on Twitter, we're also seeing people lose access to NFTs, lose access to their wallets just because they forgot where their seed phrases are. So a lot of these kind of problems started becoming very prevalent in our sphere of friends and all that kind of stuff. So that was happening in one corner. On the other corner, I mentioned that between the three of my current co-founders at Castle, we were just hacking a bunch of different things. So we built, a browser extension wallet because we were like, oh, maybe we can compete with MetaMask. And then as we started reaching out to more teams, you know, they were like, oh, if you do this, you'll have to be responsible for anti-money laundering issues. If you have an exchange in your wallet, for example, and we're like, oh, you know, we're a young team. I don't know if you want to deal with anti-money laundering issues right now. So let's think of something a little bit more simple because, you know, there's a lot of user experience improvements that can already be done. So maybe not jumping into the legal sphere right away is our best course of action. So we kind of scoped it down a bit. Then we looked at browser extensions to maybe integrate with Twitter in some capacity. So, you know, if people had ENS names show up on Twitter, can we append an additional view or something like that? And, you know, we started building a lot of different things. And as we kind of talked to more of the community, whether it was with different DAOs or different investors or different just people, different creators in the ecosystem, a common theme that we noticed was a lot of people liked the simple user experiences that we were designing to, you know, whether it was a wallet or browser extension. People were like, hey, like you guys have a pretty good perspective on building something that's very simple and easy to use. And so I think where we started picking up a lot of traction was we did a, I guess it's kind of like a boot camp through Gitcoin's kernel program. It's an 8-week boot camp. It connects creators, investors, and developers that are thinking about the next version of the internet over the course of 6 to 8 weeks. And you kind of just, you know, network, network, network. Build, and showcase, you know, everything you're working on. And through that, a lot of investors had reached out and they're like, hey, like, we know you don't have an idea yet, but we want to fund your team to start experimenting with a little bit more seriousness, right? Because we understand you guys are doing this on the side. We want your team to go at it full time. And so that brought us to like the middle of summer. So this was from like March till maybe August. In August, September, my co-founders and I all quit our day jobs and we were like, okay, you know, before we actually raise any capital, let's show investors that we're committed to Web3 building, et cetera. So we kind of, you know, quit. And then we ended up going to a conference, MCON. And MCON was, I think, organized by Meta Cartel in Denver. And, you know, a lot of the investors we were talking to, we were showcasing to them, like, here is some simple products that we can introduce to the ecosystem. Here's the perspective that we bring. Are you interested in funding us? And investors are always looking for ways or teams that are focusing on UX. And so I think through that journey, we have now become this team that is looking to take our UX hats and applying to a lot of the existing ecosystem that we see in Web3. And so since September, we've been heads down. We secured some funding. We closed our round in November, and I'll talk about what our product is maybe in a bit, but that's kind of how we became Castle and this team that's focused on UX.
One thing that I like about the speaking to founders is to understand the problem they see and that they are itching to solve, which kind of it's clear now to me. But the second best thing about founders is how they pick the name for their companies. And Castle doesn't necessarily speak directly with NFTs or allude to the image of how did you come with, you know, come up with the name?
Yeah, that's a great question. One thing that was very prevalent last year was the coordination that was happening in the crypto ecosystem. We saw a bunch of DAOs forming together. We saw people kind of coming together for a specific mission or a specific event. And a lot of people were trying to encapsulate that with NFTs or through gaming. So we saw all these little online communities forming. And so one of the things that we kind of started thinking about was like, what if we branded each of these communities as a castle? So that's kind of like what we were thinking. There's these little castles that are forming all around the world, each with their purpose. And we want to be the infrastructure that people use in the future to kind of facilitate, whether it's a DeFi DAO or an NFT DAO, or maybe it's a group of friends that are just buying and selling crypto tokens together. I think these are all castles at different scale that will coexist on the internet. And that's kind of like our thinking behind our name.
Interesting. I like that. Yeah. Well, I mean, you just brought up the DAOs, right? DAOs are the new hottest thing in the space. And I keep, you know, at least in my perspective, we know we're early, but the DAO seems that we're earlier. Like it's hard for me to act. And I've interviewed a few people that are working directly with DAOs, and it still sort of escapes me how I usually call them the disorganized autonomous organizations, because I try to participate in a few and it was like, okay, this is just too overwhelming. There's so much noise in the space. Is this something that you guys are trying to bring into the product as well? And you can just, you know, jump into and talk about the product, but how, you know, being inspired by the, you know, many castles across the web, how does that in a sense speaks to the DAOs that are emerging? And you can talk about all you want about your product. I'm super curious about it.
In terms of like DAOs themselves, I think the premise is quite nice, right? You have specific teams that are maybe curating art or looking to build a financial protocol, and people are forming around them. And then I think the communities are there, and then later on, other people want to join these existing communities, whether they want to do marketing or come in as a developer. I think what we noticed people that are entering the crypto space or trying to interact with DAOs, there's two big challenges. One is actually onboarding people. You see a DAO that you like, everyone says this DAO needs help, and you're like, okay, cool, but where do I start? You know, sometimes it's as simple as the person not having a crypto wallet to start getting paid. Sometimes, DAOs say they need help, but we have no idea what they're actually looking for. A lot of these kind of gaps are there. And kind of to what you said, the information somewhere, but it's just disorganized. And so we kind of started in that ecosystem. We didn't think at that point when we started, like the problems were too consistent yet. I think each DAO has their own specific set of problems. Like some have hiring down pat, the others might have a job board, others have payments down. But like, I think we were trying to find something that everyone was experiencing at the same time. So we kind of took another step back. And I'll dive into like what Castle eventually kind of focuses on. The other problem that we saw with DAOs as well is retention, right? So you might be able to join it. So some DAOs actually do a great job on engaging with their communities right away. If there's a task that needs to be done, they'll assign it. But what happens when that first set of tasks, so the first task is completed, they get paid, how do you get that person to come back and do it again? Right, I think continuity is important. If you want to grow your company, if you want to grow your DAO, I think a lot of these things need to be thought through. And there's very few DAOs that I think have done that. Even last year at the conference that we went to at MCON, we had a lot of people that have participated in DAOs and they got it paid from DAOs. But all of them had experiences that were less than 6 months, right? So I think we're still in that phase where we want to see, like, you know, after the 6 month mark, is a person consistently leading projects, building on projects, contributing to projects? And if they do build a good resume, is there opportunities for them to get promoted or get higher compensation? So I think that's kind of that needs to be solved before we get even more people jumping into these decentralized organizations. So that's kind of our perspective, at least my perspective on DAOs itself. With Castle, what we actually started looking at was what is the underlying thing that people need to interact with the crypto space. And I think we saw that DAOs are using multi-signature wallets, we started looking at that. And so, you know, at first we're like, okay, people are collecting a lot of liquidity, whether it's through DAOs or people that are large collectors in the space or people that are sitting on a bunch of funds. They'll either kind of send all their funds to a hardware device, or they're a little bit more tech savvy, and so they'll use a multi-signature wallet. And so we started experimenting with different tools, and we saw that there's a lot of UX challenges using Gnosis. The Gnosis Safe, which is like the biggest multi-signature wallet in the Ethereum ecosystem. And so what we eventually ended up building was, now Castle is a web app that you can kind of log into with your individual wallet, and you can import all of your Gnosis Safes in there. You can have Gnosis Safes with your friends. You can have Gnosis Safes that you're part of for maybe a DAO. You might even have a Gnosis Safe for yourself. But what we're doing with the web app is we're building the common use cases in the crypto space, so that, you know, you don't have to be concerned about phishing attacks or interacting with the wrong tokens or whatever, into our Castle app, which is, you know, essentially now a web app that takes the Gnosis Safes and makes it usable across like the common use cases in the crypto space.
Interesting. And in terms of the architecture, are you actually using Gnosis as a component or using Gnosis code bases to start with? How did you guys sort of come, because I like the concept of building on top of stuff that already exists, because that's what open source is all about. How did you guys set this up for you to be able to actually sort of claim the IP, because you're obviously creating something new on top of whatever you guys are, you know, building on top of?
So we wanted to do a few things. So we saw that the NFT ecosystem was bringing in a lot of people that aren't super tech savvy, but they're interested in the uniqueness that NFTs provide for different types of media. And so we were getting this audience that was coming in, and they're making a lot of money. And so we're like, okay, we want to help these people interact with the crypto ecosystem in a way that's easy and in a way that's secure as well. And then we looked at, you know, a bunch of different solutions. We looked at mobile wallets. We looked at MetaMask. We looked at all these things. And we saw that the Gnosis multi-signature smart contract wallets are actually already holding a lot of liquidity. I think we did an analysis on Dune Analytics, and we saw that there's over $100 billion worth of assets in those sets of smart contracts. So we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. So what we decided to do is we took the Gnosis Safe smart contracts and we built a user interface on top of it to start. And then our user interface is now, like, what we're trying to do is procure like a certain set of common things that people do in the NFT ecosystem in our web app. And so right now, that's as simple as buying and selling NFTs with things like OpenSea or gem.xyz, and making all of that available in our web app so that as an NFT trader or collector, you don't have to think too much about like, oh, am I on the right website? Am I buying the right collection? Because you'll see a lot of the data that's relevant to you. And then when you buy the assets, it's going to be stored in the smart contract wallet instead of, you know, a hot wallet. And the smart contract wallet in this case should be more secure if you set it up correctly, because it'll be multiple keys that oversee the account instead of just one key that is, I think, commonly used right now.
We might be maybe, I don't know, 100 million people in crypto right now, like actively working or using it. For this to become really popular and scale to where we can call this an industry, it has to reach more people, right? People keep saying, oh, we'll help onboard the next billion people, but are you actively doing this by just changing incentives and giving them more yield? Or are you turning their lives easier to actually get to that yield, right? Because if it's just, if you have to go through like all these hoops and ladders and like, you know, it's just not conducive, right? The grandpa who holds, you know, his $100 million of wealth that he amassed throughout his life, it's not going to rely on something that they don't understand to actually give them 4% yield on their dollar. That's just simply not going to happen. So, and they're not going to even tap into this novelty of, you know, digital art that can act, you know, they can actually collect and make money off of, right? So I love what you guys are doing, because this level of abstraction is actually what is going to unlock the UX for the next, you know, however many people, right?
Exactly. I think we're seeing, you know, simple things like discovering opportunities, agreeing with your friends, agreeing amongst yourself, and, you know, kind of deciding like, how do we balance all of this so that this continues to be as easy to use, right? I think there's a lot of tech out there that, you know, allows you to do things securely with privacy, but then they compromise UX. But I think we need teams that focus on, you know, what are the trade-offs that are necessary so that we can onboard the next 100 million and so on.
Yeah, 100%. And one thing that I keep, you know, I try not to, because I think we tend to overprice decentralization, and I'm okay with that conceptually. The real world is more complicated than that. Like, people will want to yell at someone at some point. So, and if it's completely decentralized, well, who am I yelling at the network? That's not acceptable. People don't, yeah, cognitively, we don't process that as human beings. So in a sense, and I keep having these conversations at work, which is, decentralization is a spectrum. Some things will work really, really well as, you know, decentralized as they can be, like the networks. I'm okay with that. The networks need to be as decentralized as they can be because they secure the transactions. And that's perfectly fine. Everything else up the stack might not be as. Because it's not just, one, it could be technically impossible. And two, maybe the next, you know, 100 million people or a billion people that are coming into this, they don't really care. As long as they solve their problem, which is buy and selling NFTs, they don't really care how decentralized these things are. But if it's running on top of a very decentralized infrastructure, like way down below, that works fine. So how are you seeing this as you develop these things? What's the type of conversation you and your co-founders are having? And what's the type of conversation that you guys are having with the marketplace in terms of how these things are moving in terms of not only developing, but also understanding the impacts as the features get, you know, put in front of people?
Yeah. So I think right now, because we're an earlier company, we're actually able to test a lot of our stuff one-on-one with different types of users. So, you know, we'll get on a call with them, we'll see them get onboarded onto the platform, and we'll see like what things are going well, what things are not going well. And then we'll have direct conversations with them in regards to like, you know, this would be nice, this would be nice. How do you do this without compromising the decentralization aspect of it? And some of the things that have come up is a lot of people are requesting mobile solutions. You know, they're like, okay, you know, let's say I'm in a group and it's a trusted group of friends. And if there's like one person is starting all the transactions on a desktop, maybe on my phone, I can just look at them and agree or disagree. And I can quickly validate, you know, the intent that's being put there. So whether they want to buy something, sell something, a lot of people are okay with that because they're in a trusted group. A lot of people are looking to integrate with existing services, right? So a lot of people are already on Discord. A lot of people are on Telegram. So they're like, hey, because you guys are playing in the space where you're focusing on UX, you know, before it was taboo to even consider Web2 integrations, but now a lot of people are like, hey, like I'm already in Telegram. I'm already in Discord. Like if my crypto addresses are needing signatures or if they need approvals or assets are coming in and out, like I'd love to receive some level of notification. So it's like figuring out what those types of notifications are so people can, you know, quickly respond and all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, we're a pretty good team in terms of being able to be with our customers and interact with them. And then because we're able to ship quickly, we can also validate or invalidate things very quickly as well. So I think what we're trying to do right now is just pick, like, be very picky with like the types of users that are using our platform. And then as we solve their problems, I think it's like still being selective, but kind of slowly expanding that to like broader and broader markets as we build it out. Eventually, you know, we're going to start going across the world, maybe have some API component that people build on top of. Because I think the Nose is safe. It's a smart contract wallet, which implies that people can, you know, add other smart contract integrations onto the Nose safe. And so, you know, maybe later on, people want to jump into groups, sell their position in a group to somebody else. So I think all these things people are asking about. But I think like these are very crypto savvy people, but we're like, okay, like, sure, you may want to do that later. Right now, onboarding is our biggest challenge. How do we solve that problem? Right? You have all your assets in your hot wallet right now. What is the barrier that we need to break so that you move all your hot wallet assets into a Castle Gnosis safe experience, right? So it's things like this that come up. And our team is just like very good at like, here are the designs, Maren and Ayush and Steven, like, let's go build it out in a week or so. And then, you know, we'll hit up our buddies and see if it works or not works. And then what's also good as well is like our team also is actively participating in the NFT ecosystem. So like the question we're always trying to answer is like, what is stopping us from actually using our own product? Because we're also like, you know, speculating on NFTs and all that kind of stuff. So it's good to have all these different perspectives while we're young as well.
Interesting. And I think what is the range of ages from the people that you're tapping in as customers? Who's like, what's the oldest and who's the oldest and who's the youngest? What's the kind of demographics? Because, you know, we might want to try and ignore that. But as I get old, Discord to me is just unbearable. I can't, you know, it's just way too, you know, too much noise and everything. And I do try. I'm that stubborn, but still hard. So what's the age range you guys are tapping into for the closest users that you're consulting with?
So our age range is quite broad, I would say. I think this is like a function of crypto in the sense that I think we've hit up people that are early 20s to like early 40s as well. I think, you know, some of our investors, they're sitting on a lot of ETH and they're like, yeah, we'll use the Castle product because it does XYZ really well. And then we have a bunch of kids on the other end that are like, yo, we want to buy and sell NFTs. We want to try all these different crypto products. Like, we'll jump in as well. I think our goal still remains the same, whether it's a 20-year-old or 40, 50, 60-year-old. We want to make our core product as simple as simple as can be for the user. I think the additional integrations are all things that, you know, maybe later we can customize for different types of clients, but they're not like mandatory, right? Because the decision-making process, the buying and the selling is the only thing that matters for the crypto wallet. And that's going to be like our core focus. And we want to make that as easy as can be. And then, you know, if people need additional nudges or notifications so that they actually jump back into the platform because our customers are leaning in that direction, we'll definitely do that later. I'm closer to you as well, where I'm like, I can't tolerate Discord. I'd rather, like, you know, someone email me and that'd be great, or even message me or text me. Discord is definitely, you know, leaning towards overwhelming for myself.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm not dissing Discord. You know, my kids use it. They love it. It helps them do their shit. I'm okay with that. I just can't, you know, yeah, in that sense, I'm young, but in that sense, I'm old. And, you know, yeah, I know the audience is going to bear with us because it's just, I think most of the audience from the podcast knows Discord and also doesn't like love it, but their kids do. So we can balance out with that. I love that you guys are focusing on that specific chunk of the experience. That's how, you know, early stuff gets good, like really focused and fixing whatever is broken in that experience. And that's usually the mark of a good project that's starting with the right, you know, foot forward, which is, okay, so let's focus on this one thing that we can really, really fix. Everything else can come later. And I think, you know, I love to hear that. And yeah, congratulations. And, you know, I'm not a big NFT collector, but, you know, specifically because I currently feel that OpenSea is just amassing too much power in the space, and we're running away from the, you know, Zuckerbergs of the world, and OpenSea is just becoming so big that maybe like stuff like Looks Rare or Aspen that's upcoming and like Nifty. So these other platforms seem to be somewhat fixing a few things in the space, but not all. So yeah, it's still something that I'm not a huge participant on. But one thing that crossed my mind as I was speaking was, isn't the fact that you guys are working towards, based on a multi-sig, trying to organize how things get executed, it does have a feel of a mini DAO. If you guys fix this for the NFT space, what are the potential use cases that come after that? I mean, we know that there's a lot of DAO tooling out there. I think there's more DAO tooling out there than there are actually DAOs, I think. It feels like it, at least. You don't need to, if you can't, obviously, but what is in the roadmap in terms of like long-term thinking? You guys are focused on the right thing right now, but I'm pretty sure that you have a medium long-term thinking. What is exactly there that you would ambition, you know, knowing what you know now?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, a couple things. I think the one thing that will really improve the experience for NFT folks right now is we're not just integrating with OpenSea. We're actually integrating with an NFT marketplace aggregator called gem.xyz. They actually have a consolidation of all of the different marketplaces like LooksRare, Universe, OpenSea, etc. And so you can buy and sell through their kind of back end. They have their own set of smart contracts that connects with all the other ones. The second thing was smart contract wallets allows to minimize the number of transactions that are actually required to like buy and sell things. So a lot of the token approvals, the actual fulfilling of an order, we're able to like create one simple transaction and facilitate that as like one sign off instead of like having a hot wallet, you know, approve like 10 different tokens and then doing the purchase. So we're kind of streamlining a lot of that stuff. So I think that's like our next big goal. The one after that will probably be building out a mobile app to kind of, you know, get people more comfortable facilitating these types of transactions. So that's probably like our timeline for the next 6 months. As we do more and more conversations, we're realizing amongst friend groups, mid-sized groups, and DAOs and larger organizations, a lot of them are using multi-signature wallets, and they're also sitting on a lot of liquidity. The liquidity can be in US dollars, it could be in Ether, and some of them are DAOs, some of them are startups that have raised funding in crypto. And then what we've noticed is these companies are not actually mobilizing this crypto. They're not yield farming, they're not staking. And I'm not saying you have to do anything high risk, but because the money is in a Gnosis safe, it's actually quite cumbersome to have them facilitate a staking transaction or a liquidity providing transaction, or even something as simple as, you know, putting your money into Aave and earning, you know, whatever percentage it is on Ether or USDC, for example. So I think in the next 6 months after that, we'll probably look at mobilizing that part of the Gnosis Safe ecosystem through the Castle UI as well. So that's kind of like where our head is trending. We would have done it the other way around, but I think because my friends come from a consumer background and a lot of new consumers were, you know, looking for better experiences in the NFT ecosystem, we thought this would be like something that we can improve very quickly with our insights. And then, you know, the larger kind of opportunity, I think, will remain with mobilizing funds to be staked or yield farmed or whatever else as well. So that's kind of like where our headspace is at right now. Yeah. I was surprised. I was so surprised that people are like sitting on this much money, but not staking it or not yield farming or whatever. And I'm like, you know, I'm not telling you to go gamble on, you know, the next new token. You can become a staker very reliably and be okay. But I think the experience is just so bad. People aren't doing it.
It's like, don't you like your own money kind of vibes? Do you really hate your money that much? Yeah. But yeah, I like that. So treasure is everywhere. Just stay stay tuned, because, you know, yeah, this is important. And, you know, thinking about this, right, as we're talking about onboarding, one thing is onboarding consumers, right? There's some forms of incentives. But now when you talk about a treasury, you're talking about institutions, right? So you mentioned Aave. Aave has their own institutional version of Aave, which is ARC. Then MetaMask now has a version that's MMI, MetaMask Institutional. And we're seeing a lot of institutions, you know, following the trails of Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy in entering the crypto space by buying Bitcoin or Ether. Big fours are now stashing, you know, crypto on their balance sheets as well. And the actual tooling to do that at the institutional level might not be up to par yet. And there is one thing in this. I come from the, you know, institutional banking side of things, which is there's a terminology that is enterprise grade. These guys need to be comfortable with the tooling that they use to manage money. And when we're talking about crypto, once you lose the keys, you lose the money. It's, you know, ever more imperative to them. So if you can turn that experience into a more palatable experience, not only you're going to help bring people into crypto, but you're going to help bring institutions into crypto. How does that sound to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the beauty of what we're working on. If you can solve it for my mom or my grandma or whatever it might be, I think we can also work towards getting enterprises on board. There's a lot of funds that are with companies like Coinbase Custody or Anchorage, specifically just to hold like ERC-20 tokens. But hey, like, can Castle kind of carve out a space for NFTs, right? So right now we're building specifically on the Gnosis Safe smart contracts, but you know, our team is very open to building on other types of interfaces as well. So Coinbase Custody, for example, whether it's like an enterprise play that we have to make, or maybe they have an open API that we can eventually build on top of, I think our team is very open for that. There's actually a piece of tech called multi-party computation that I think these different teams are practicing right now, where, you know, from an institution perspective, the institution holds a certain set of keys, and then the custody provider also holds a certain set of keys. And so then, you know, they have shared custody over this institutional crypto asset that, you know, institution has. So that kind of sounds like a multi-signature experience, but, you know, you're trusting this custody provider to be that trusted party. You know, if they're doing it at that level, you know, I think whether it's a Gnosis smart contract that they use or maybe some other tech that we could eventually build on top of. And I think some of the custody providers actually do have open APIs, or maybe not open APIs, but APIs that we can build on top of. I think Castle can definitely make a play towards that as well. And then, you know, further down the timeline as well, there's actually decentralized custody providers also entering the space with this MPC technology kind of being its main selling point. And these ones are even cooler because they're saying that, you know, we will allow MPC wallets that aren't only for one chain. You can actually use the same wallet for multiple chains. Right. And so our gold kind of standard, I think at that point, would be like a Castle app that's built on this MPC technology that is decentralized. Right. And maybe in 20 years, we have custody providers that are decentralized, giving institutions the trust and security they need. And then we do, you know, inch towards that decentralized world we're all thinking about.
Yeah. And that reminds me that the decentralization is not a given. We'll need to fight for it if we really think that it's worthwhile. Yeah. Because we're, you know, I've been in the enterprise space for some time, and the talks of having CBDCs, which on paper look really, really great. We're not having the social discussion about CBDCs that we should, I think.
Absolutely.
I usually try to, you know, get some discussion on the podcast, but, you know, it's a much wider discussion that needs to take place in that regard. And it just hit me. Coming back a little bit to these institutional play and potentials, right? I know that with the tech that we have now, and we can all say we're early, but the tech we have now, we can now digitally separate possession and ownership and make that automated in multiple ways, right? What in the NFT space, and I'm not even talking about treasury, what in the NFT space are you seeing that takes advantage of that? I know guilds are somewhat playing that space for play to earn. Where else are you seeing this? Because you're really deep into NFTs. Is there any other use case that you've seen that is actually playing with these two characteristics that now we're able to actually manage digitally?
Yeah, so I think what's going to happen in the future is I think a person will have a wallet that might have social tokens, right? And these social tokens can be represented by NFTs or maybe ERC-20 tokens. So we're going to see like maybe individual ownership of social tokens, or maybe it's group ownership of social tokens. We might see, you know, the gaming use case that you mentioned, where like maybe there's one group of people that own a bunch of NFTs, and then they're renting out these NFTs to another group of people so that they can participate in different ecosystems or games. I think we're seeing, you know, shared kind of ownership in that realm. There's a lot of speculative pieces that I think, you know, a lot of people talk about it and it sounds like a great idea, but I think we're still moving towards it. I think translating real world assets into NFTs and kind of describing or prescribing ownership using NFTs in some capacity there, right? So, you know, I think the use case that everyone's working towards is here's a house in Canada. Can people from like six different countries have ownership of this house in Canada, right? And, you know, with an NFT, it's like, oh yeah, like just make it an NFT, put it in a Gnosis safe and assign like everyone owns what 15% of it or whatever it might be. It sounds great from the tech perspective, but you know, the legal warfare that will probably take place over it or legal nightmare more than anything, I think we're not there yet. So I think those are some of the things that we're talking about, thinking about. A lot of the DAO participation, whether it's voting, delegated voting on different decisions that need to be made, I think NFTs are showing up in that as well. So, you know, I think right now the Gnosis Safe does a great job at storing those assets, but then, you know, how do you take an NFT and let someone borrow it for one of these specific use cases, whether it's voting or getting into an event? I think that's kind of like where we're also thinking about it as well.
I like that. Yeah. You know, it reminds me of time sharing when like own a week of a, you know, beach house or a house at the mountains, and you go there and like, and you run into someone that's there using your week. Like
the granularity is there, the tech is there, but how do you enforce it? I think that's going to be where the fun, well, maybe not the fun, but the research needs to be done a little bit more.
And the whole thing about real world, right? We're talking, you know, digital with digital works really well because it's everything is on the same environment. You kind of have this some degree of control.
Yeah.
When you go out into the world and you try to bridge from digital to physical, I heard the word phygital the other day, and I think that was like a little bit cringy, but maybe that's the word, right? That defines this sort of border between what is digital and what's physical, and resolving that in terms of, because when you're on a blockchain, you know that's one thing, right? An NFT is an NFT, and that's the only NFT of that kind in that blockchain.
Yeah.
You break it out to the world, there are no boundaries, you know. You know, stupidity exists and it's rampant on the other side of the spectrum. So yeah, this is going to be a challenge when you start bridging these things. I know this is a real challenge in the traceability space, because when you're doing like on-chain traceability with real world assets, you got to have checkpoints to make sure that everything speaks to each other. Imagine that in like shared property across the globe. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. There's definitely like a cultural shift, regulatory shift, like a lot of different kind of industries have to kind of work towards that. And, you know, if either any one of them say no, like it kind of impedes a lot of the growth that can potentially happen. This is why I think it's going to take decades before we do see NFT ownership of any real world assets. And that's why a lot of people are excited about the metaverse. We'll see if that plays out the way that some people imagine. Everyone references the movie Ready Player One, and you're like, yeah, it makes sense to have a crypto wallet there and all your assets are in your crypto wallet and you have a digital avatar. But do people want to live online? I don't think so. You know, like a lot of restrictions are opening up around the world, and people are very happy to go outside and get some sunshine and run around. So
yeah, if we were in a constantly pandemic world, I would say that that would probably be like a very weird and dread scenario. Maybe like dystopic a little bit, but yeah. But now I want to eat good food that's not existing in the metaverse, and I want to go to the gym. That maybe maybe that has a little bit of sort of overlap between, you know, digital working out.
Yeah.
Maybe, right? Really, yeah, very light. But yeah, that's another thing. Do I want to be Mauricio on the metaverse? I want to be a blob of light with, you know, maybe a couple thumbs.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really need to be Mauricio and not carry the goatee to the metaverse. So, dude, I know time is at a premium for founders, and we're almost about an hour. So I'll just, you know, leave it open to you. Any final remarks, any messages to the audience? Where can they track you down online? Where can they follow all the good stuff you're building with Castle, and also follow you on your workouts and your jokes online? Because, you know, it's almost,
yes,
it's a lot of fun. So yeah, take it away, man.
Yeah, for sure. So I think one thing that comes with being a founder is the stress of realizing that if you don't do anything, nothing will happen. So, you know, with that kind of being your mindset, I think it's very important to strike a balance. And Mauricio referenced you working out. I do work out a lot. I make sure I get up at like 7 or 8 a.m. in the morning and kind of start my day. So typically right now, we've gotten into a good rhythm where like we work, you know, maybe 10 hours a day. Take breaks to see friends, family, you know, make sure you call your parents, all that stuff still applies. And then get your hobbies and fitness prioritized, because I think, you know, like anything in life, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, and it applies in the startup space as well. So, you know, you can track my socials. I'm sure Mauricio will share it in addition to this podcast. I have Instagram, Twitter for myself. And then right now, Castle is only active on Twitter. We're probably going to launch in the next few months once we kind of tighten up all the kind of things that we're working on our app. But yeah, if you guys want to like start kind of understanding what pain points we're trying to solve, create a Gnosis safe, try to pull some money into it, and try to buy an NFT or try to sell an NFT, you'll realize the clunkiness sucks, and Castle is going to make that as easy as can be. And, you know, we're looking at it from ways that minimize the number of transactions, minimizes the number of clicks. And hopefully by the end of this year, you'll have like this comprehensive desktop and mobile experience to like do whatever you want to do with NFTs, whether it's for yourself or for a group of friends. So if that excites you, hit us up. And, you know, we're looking from individual users to enterprise players and everyone in between. We'd love to hear, you know, your opinions. We do have a private beta as well. So if you do want to check it out, you can message me directly and we'll set up a call with you and show you what we have. Mauricio, you included.
Absolutely. We'd love to see that. Awesome. Miriam, thank you so much once again for coming over. Love to have you here at this new capacity. Good luck with Castle. We'll keep tabs on what you guys are doing. Bring it all on the podcast on the regular basis. If anything new, you know, breaks out, just let us know and we'll report on that. Happily do that. Thank you so much. Nice to see you again. Take care, man. See ya.
Likewise, Mauricio. All the best.
Você pode ouvir o Block Drops Podcast nas plataformas Anchor FM, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Numis e iColab. Entre em contato conosco através do Instagram, Block Drops Podcast, no Twitter, Block Drops Pod, e por e-mail, blockdropspodcast@gmail.com. Yay! E um salve aí pro Meran, tomou esse tempo para falar com a gente, e para você também que está nos ouvindo. E pode conferir o trabalho dessa galera nos links que estão na descrição do episódio. A gente fica por aqui. Stay rare, stay weird. Let's fucking go!